Progressive is proud to honor our veterans by donating vehicles to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. This year celebrates 8 years and more than 750 vehicles donated. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Raider Nation, welcome back in here to Murph's Fan Cave for another RFR conversation with one of our listener favorites, the one and only Pete Koch. Pete Koch, you can find him at Pete Koch, P-E-T-E-K-O-C-H on Instagram. And of course, you know Pete from a long history in the NFL, starting off in 1984 when he was drafted overall, number 16th out of the University of Maryland, and then concluded his career, of course, Los Angeles in 1989 with the Raiders, and then also went on to a successful movie career and entertainment career, not only movies, but television shows and commercials, was in the movie Heat, Johnny B. Good, Loverboy, Conspiracy Theory, and most famously, of course, he was the Swede in Heartbreak Ridge with Clint Eastwood. So welcome back to Murph's Fan Cave and Raiders Fan Radio, the one and only Pete Koch.
Well, that's quite an introduction, Murph. Hey, thanks, guys. Good to be with you.
Good to have you back. And, you know, we were talking just a little bit before we got started about how we would always have you on around this time of year to talk a little bit about not only what you thought about the Raiders, of course, and where the team was going and what they'd done in the offseason, but your firsthand experience going to Alumni Weekend. And with all that stuff being canceled and everything being restricted down to COVID, have you had any preseason experience or any exposure to the team, or are you just kind of like the rest of us all on quarantine?
You know, I've got my handful of, Raider buddies that I stay in touch with. And most of these guys, you know, I look forward to seeing at the Raiders weekend, which was sadly canceled. You know, 2020 has been, I think, largely the year of cancellation. And that one of the great exceptions is, you know, we're seeing a great exception is we're going to get some playoff Major League Baseball and playoff NBA. And boy, fingers crossed, it looks like we're going to get an entire NFL season. And if there's, in my judgment, you know, that's like a saving grace for 2020, which has just been such a tough year for so many folks, not only in the United States, but around the world. But yeah, no, to answer your question. So, you know, who some of the guys I stay in touch with, and I'll mention Steve Wright, the guard tackle that was Steve Wright, he had a beautiful long NFL career and spent half his career, I think, with the Cowboys and then half his career with the Raiders. And I stay in touch with Steve. He was he and I were roomies in training camp back in the old days with the Los Angeles Raiders when we held training camp in Oxnard. Beautiful little town, not far from the Pacific Ocean, about halfway between Los Angeles and Santa Barbara. And so back in those days, so Steve Wright, and then another offensive lineman, buddy of mine, Steve Wisniewski, Big Wiz, and stay in touch with Wiz, and he's doing great. And he looks like he can play. I mean, Steve has lost some weight. He's gotten trimmed down a bit like me, but Steve is on that short list of, in my judgment, of players across the spectrum of the NFL. It's on a very short list of guys that are should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but hadn't gotten I think he's going to have to wait in line a little bit longer. Big Wiz is doing good. So, yeah, and Willie Galton is a guy I used to see at the gym 3-4 times a week, but they've got all the gyms closed down here in Los Angeles, which I think is a shame. And you know, one of these days we'll get back to normal. So, you know, some of those relationships were, my gym buddies, and Willie Gault was definitely one of those guys. I'll see him again.
You mentioned Wiz looks like he could still play. Of course, Pete, you do as well and have for a long, long time. Really never lost your physique after your playing career, because that's a big part of your life and has been. And that's one of the reasons, too, why we wanted to have you back on the show, is that, you know, with fitness and wellness and you, frankly, being such an expert in that field, how has it been during the quarantine? You mentioned the gyms are closed. For those that are new to your Instagram, you know, that aren't seeing what you're doing with your workouts week in, week out, like what is that like for you and for someone that's had such a focus on that? What's that been like? And then I want to have a follow-up to that, is what is it going to be like for the players, and what do you think that they're going through in terms of their off-season conditioning?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, so as a longtime fitness professional, and I've long maintained physical fitness, particularly as you age, but really at any stage of your life, is an incredibly important feature to your overall health. So, you know, and one of the people that's had an influence, you know, in my life, and I've been blessed to have so many great mentors when it came to physical fitness. Just to give you one quick point, like when I was that football player, the only reason that I, you know, attained the level of success that I did was because I became fanatical about my preparation in the weight room. And not understanding, I was able to understand very early on, going back to high school, that preparation in the weight room, in the off season, very importantly, the strength training that goes on during the season, when you're in high school, college, and the NFL is exceptionally important, but it's much more of maintaining where you're at. And another part of the strength training that's so important is it acts as really like a prophylactics to injury. Understand that if a typical NFL football player would stop strength training and just show up, go to the meetings, go to practice, and then go home, and then play the game on Sunday, the injury rate would go way up. And a lot of people don't really understand that. So strength training is very, very important to keeping the guys healthy. And I was just one of those guys that adapted to. I was very, very skinny in high school, and I knew right away that I needed to get it set in my mind that I was going to be me in the weight room. We're going to be partners. We're going to be in a partnership. I was very fortunate. I had a coach in high school that played his college football at the Naval Academy. His name is John Kalo, and John Kalo, to give you a historical perspective, was Roger Staubach's center at the Naval Academy. Of course, Roger Staubach.
Oh, okay.
Even before Roger Staubach won the Super Bowl with the Cowboys, he won the Outland Trophy, the Heisman Trophy, I should say, as a quarterback when he was at the Naval Academy. John Kalo and him were very, very close there. John Kalo didn't play in the NFL, but as fate would have it, he was a high school gym coach, and he was also my driver's ed coach back in the day. I think where about everybody's driver when you did driver ed in high school, you know, that was usually your PE coach. And but John Kalo had a great influence on me, and he said to me, "Pete, you've got enormous potential." This is when I was 14 years old, and I was playing on a freshman football team. I went to a combined junior senior high, so we were all in there together, 7th through 12. And he says to me, and I was in awe of him, that the varsity coach was talking to me, and he says, "You've got a lot of potential. You've got things that we can't teach you. You've got height, you've got speed, you've got quickness, and you have a great love. I can see the passion you've got for playing football. You don't mind the contact that comes to you naturally." And he was exactly right on all those points, but he said, "You're weak." And that's playing the language. Nobody at any age, at any time in anybody's life, male or female, nobody wants you to look you in the eye. Nobody, a person in a position of authority to say to you, "Hey, you're weak." And he said that to me, and he goes, "But it's fixable. And you fix it by hitting the weight room." And we had the proverbial beat down, this is in the 70s, beat up bare bones weight room in the basement boiler room of the high school. I grew up on Long Island. And And there it started for me, and it changed my life. And I've always had an interest. Then I started reading the bodybuilding magazines, and I became a fan of bodybuilding. And then as I went to college, I learned that the way bodybuilders train and the way football players, in my case, a defensive end should train, were different. And but there was similarities there, of course, but they were different. And I learned a great deal from the outstanding strength and conditioning coach we had at the University of Maryland at that time, named Frank Costello. And then from there, I went to the NFL and I kept on learning and building. And then I left the game with the incredible passion for maintaining the things that I learned, and a thirst for how I could not only I was not really interested in getting into strength coaching at the level of working with football players or athletes, but I was much more interested in working with the general population. And this was a way I subsidized, you know, my acting career, quite frankly. So a lot of actors take a side job as a bartender or a waiter. And in my case, it was being a trainer. And I still do that to this day. And I work with people, and I'm passionate about helping people. And it's never been the two sides of the coin. Interestingly, it's never been more important, and it's never been more challenging to stay physically fit as it is during this COVID situation. And here we are in 2020. That's the reality of it. Statistically speaking, the numbers are coming out. People are increasingly gaining weight, working out less, and getting sicker here in the United States. And that's a tragedy. And I'm, you know, trying in my own way through social media to reach out to people and to help them.
Wow, that's awesome. And you know, I you know, you from the first time that we spoke, you know, you influenced my own fitness journey. And I've you know, over the past really couple years, 3 years, you know, I've lost some weight, started adding some muscle, and really been putting in work, not only into you know, maintaining a proper diet, but getting into the gym. And it really had a big impact on me. I mean, I'm of a particular age now. I'm almost, you know, I'm a few years from 50. And something that you said was, no one, when they get to be elderly or older in life, wishes that they would have done more cardio when they can't get off the toilet. And that really resonated with me, that importance of being strong and the importance of strength. Speak a little bit to the listening audience out there about the importance of, what does strength training do for us and our immunities, and the things that during a time like this, during a pandemic, what are the things that we can do to benefit our bodies, not just in purely just the strength aspect of it, but the other health benefits of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, when it comes to physical fitness, we live in, beyond the world of physical fitness, we live in a world of specialization. It was only 100 years ago that if you had a problem with your stomach, you had a problem with your eye, you had a problem with your teeth, you had a broken bone, or a heart condition, you went to one doctor and he took care of you. He was doing all that stuff. It wasn't even that long ago. But this in the day of specialization, that, you know, you could pick one little small area. You could say you have an orthopedic problem. It could be you might go to one orthopedic specialist for your knee, but another guy that all he does is ankles, and another person all they do is deal with orthopedic problems of the cervical of the spine. It's so very highly specialized now. Certainly, you have an eye doctor separate from your ear, nose, and throat doctor separate from, and it goes on and on and on. When it comes to physical fitness, it's become, in strength training, it's become very much that way too. So there's strength coaches that specialize all over the country in things like tennis, and, you know, preparing young teenage athletes to advance their ability in the sport of tennis. And they just specialize in that. Others, gymnastics, others, distance training, distance running, or triathlete has its own sort of a culture of trainers. And certainly football and the power sports have those trainers that are specifically qualified for that. I, on the other hand, am a proud generalist. I think I can help, and I know I can help people all over the place. And if you wanted to really drill down, because, you know, you had a son or daughter that was, you know, an adolescent and that really wanted to excel in one very, very specific area. You know, like I said, tennis would be a perfect example. I'm not that guy. I don't live, breathe, and sleep tennis. And understand something. When youth, it's worth mentioning that youth athletes should have a broad approach. I think a better example would be to say, by the time you get out of high school, then you really need to start to specialize. So if you went and you watched the tennis players at the university level, they should have some pretty specialized training, and it should be separate and distinct from the training a female tennis player. That training should be separate and distinct from, for example, a female shot putter. Should be quite different. And that's where it gets highly specialized, particularly as we get older. And the way that Serena Williams would go about her strength training would be very much tailored to exactly what she's accomplishing on the tennis court. But me, I deal with the general population, and there's no need for specialization. In fact, specialization will work against you. So I want to help people globally get generally more physically fit and stronger. To that point, trainers consider all the systems of the human body, but we focus on the skeletal muscles. We focus on the bones. Skeletal muscles do? They pull muscles into position so that we can walk, and we can push and bend, and squat and do all these things. And then what really makes that work? The signaling comes from the brain, the central nervous system, defined as the brain and the nerves that innervate the muscles. So I'm really concerned with those subsystems of the human body, and then just putting all that gobbledygook aside and getting people excited about the fact that we're going to exercise. It'll be strength centric, and I'll tell you why in a second. And just to make you move, to help you control your weight. 74% of the population, the adult population of the United States, is overweight. It's no good. So we live in my opinion, the greatest country on earth, with the greatest technology. I don't care what anybody says. I got in this little back and forth on a social media thing where this guy's apparently like a nurse practitioner or something. And I said, we live in a country, I'd made a statement, where we have probably the greatest medical advances, technological advances. This is where Microsoft came from. This is where Apple comes from. And he challenged me on that. And he says, well, we rank something like 46th or something, or hit some statistic in the world in medical, I don't know, issues or something like this. And I said, okay, I accept your challenge. So if you or your loved one, your spouse or children were very, very ill, where would you go? Because people from all over the world are coming here.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So he dodged it. He didn't answer the question. He dodged it. So but that's how I feel about this country. It's an amazing country. I love this country to death. And yet we do have a problem with a big percentage of the population being overweight, and all the problems. Understand the consequence of being overweight. So again, 72% of the population is overweight. 42% is clinically obese. Clinically understanding that if a doctor measured this in a clinical setting, in a doctor's office, 42% are obese. And all of the disease, the metabolic disease, for heart disease, being obese, even being overweight, but forget that for a second, just being obese is going to in by itself act as a contributing factor to a host of diseases, cancers, heart disease, things that could lead to stroke, many different kinds of cancer. And sometimes that's confusing. I think I can help people understand this. Why? Understand something. When we think of, it's not unreasonable to think of adipose tissue. These are adipocytes. This is the name for fat cells that we have in our body.
Okay.
Wouldn't be unreasonable to think about if you looked at a steak, big T-bone steak, and you saw that it hadn't been trimmed yet, you would see it was rimmed with white. So the meat is red, it's uncooked and red, and there's this fat that borders it. And that is truly, so understand, that's, so what is a steak? Steak is the muscle tissue of a cow. Make no mistake about it, that's muscle tissue. And that white stuff is the adipose tissue, is the fat tissue of the cow. So, and that's not in, cows are, cow's a mammal. It's not entirely different than our species when it comes to that. So think of that as a second. But when we think of it, we often think, well, that you just cut that fat away and, you know, whatever, it's grizzly. It's, you know, you just throw that and it's like dead anyway, but it's not dead, but it's not, it, but fat tissue in a living person is biologically active. That's to say that it's producing things, and the things that it produces and excretes into the rest of the body, hormones among them, or most of them are bad. Most of them are bad for us. Yeah. So imagine that the fat that you carry around on your body as being billions of tiny little factories that aren't just sitting there going along for the ride. They're actually little factories producing things that are harming the rest of your body.
Wow. So all of that is going to really then compromise your overall health and immunities and everything else, and would essentially make you susceptible to all kinds of things, let alone COVID.
Exactly. A host of diseases. And if it doesn't, and it could directly contribute to things like colon cancer, stomach cancer. When people carry a lot of fat in the midsection, we see it from the outside, but we call that visceral fat, we call that subcutaneous fat. That's fat below the skin. So that's in between the skin and your layer of muscle in between there. And you know, if somebody has a belly or they have the kind of saddlebags, we can sort of obviously see that subcutaneous fat. That literally means under the surface of the tissue. But there's another kind of fat called visceral fat. And the viscera, if we thought of, we say the viscera, is, hey, that's the compartment where your internal organs are, right? So there's all kinds of stuff going on. You got your pancreas, your liver, kidneys that are contained, you know, below your lungs. That area is compartmentalized and separated by your diaphragm muscle, the muscle that helps your lungs mechanically take air in and out. So your lungs are separated from your stomach in that compartment where your descending colon, your pancreas, and all that are located. They're separated by the diaphragm muscle. And that area is, if you are gaining fat in that area, and the fat cells literally grow and attached to grow all around the internal organs there. It's called visceral fat in that visceral compartment. And just imagine that these little factories there are producing, again, things that are no good for us. And it's all about proximity. And your stomach is right there. And your colon is right there. Small intestine, large intestine. And then you say, then you wonder why there's a greater incidence of people that are obese of having colon cancer. It's right there. I hope it's easier to understand how that could possibly happen. Yeah. So that, wow, that fat, that visceral fat, is a more sinister location of fat than the subcutaneous fat, which you might have on your legs or the back of your arm.
Well, that's, you know, one of the things I thought about when I started this fitness journey is I thought about, like, you know, it's not about looking good in a t-shirt. It's about getting healthy, and all those points that you mentioned there are just fascinating to me. And I trust that our listeners are going to get something from it, you know, as well, and hopefully find motivation in it, Pete. And what would you say to, you know, especially during these times? I mean, this would be a question I would ask you normally, but let alone where you mentioned that so many people are on quarantine and they're being they're stuck in their homes, or at least limited in terms of their routines and accessibility to gyms. What do you say to the men or women that are, you know, that just need to get that first step? Like, what's that first motivating step look like? Or what advice would you give to someone that, you know, in terms of just what can they do? Is it something as simple as getting out and taking a walk, or what would you recommend?
Good. So let me set this up by saying this. Number one, 99% of us in the population right now are at no particular risk from, again, the statistics on this COVID are being so convoluted and so misused.
Amen.
So I'm doing a lot of research and listening to a lot of the smartest doctors out there. I'm not making any decisions with patients, and that's the domain of medical doctors, and I'm good at staying in my lane, but that doesn't mean I can't think critically about what's going on here. So 90% of the population is safe and they should take reasonable precaution. But exercise is so important to the total equation. We know this as well as anything, is that the people that are truly at risk, and let me just define something. It doesn't matter how many people, this many people in the state or this city tested positive, because what's happening, these numbers are getting so confusing to people. You're hearing things like tested positive, got COVID, was a positive test, got sick, used interchangeably. They all mean different things.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
50% of the 50% of the population, maybe more, will get the COVID, acquire the COVID to their system and never know it. And I might be one of them. I don't know. But it's a whole bunch of people. Well, here's what matters. Two categories. How many people get hospitalized? Why? Because that puts a burden on the medical system that we have to be very, very alert to. Number two, obviously, how many people die? Huge numbers of people have died in the assisted living home. So let's just be clear. We're not talking about an old age retirement village where lots is a golf course and this and that. We're talking about an assisted living home. What does it mean? To live, you need assistance. Let me talk in plain language. For most of these people, it means they can't get off the toilet. When you can't wipe yourself, you need an assist. You can't live alone. That's simple. That's it. What's the average life expectancy? And I heard this from a medical doctor, associate of mine. So just a guy I listen to and pay a lot of attention to. He made a very interesting point. What's the average life expectancy? Forget, do something pre-COVID, just the way it's always been. What's the average life expectancy of somebody that goes into an assisted living home? It's 6 months. So we're understanding we're at the end. And you know something? My mother went to an assisted living home and she died a few months later. She had a stroke. She survived the stroke, but she was never the same, not even close, not healthy. And that's what happened to her. And that's what happens all the time. And so if that person goes to an assisted living home and they die, and then they gave them a test in the autopsy and they say, oh, they had COVID, what'd they die of? You know, it's very difficult to tether all these things apart. And I don't think anybody's done a good job of it. So here's the numbers that are important. So if you're in a high risk category, we all know what they are. It has more to do with your metabolic age than your chronological age. If this is going to be very interesting, there's no exacting numbers on this, but I say, if you took somebody standing next to each other, one was 40 and one was 80. I got a buddy who's 86 on zero medications, lifelong bodybuilder, one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's early training partners, a guy named Chuck Mahoney, 86 years old, fit as could be, sharp as a tack. And I know, and I got a buddy who's 46, who's 100 pounds overweight, type 2 diabetes, major risk factor on both accounts. I would say, Chuck is, yeah, everybody should take the precaution necessary. But I'm saying that the 46-year-old with type 2 diabetes, who's 100 pounds overweight, is at greater risk of dying should they get COVID than an 86-year-old buddy of mine named Chuck. And because of their chronological age is one thing, but their metabolic age is completely different. And these are the things we need to consider about as a society. And nobody in the political spectrum is mentioning this because of, I don't know. The only thing I can come up with is if somebody points out that this percentage of people that are obese, and understand obesity and type 2 diabetes are connected at the hip. That's why there's a term called diobesity. But nobody in politics or even, I don't get this, why even the medical doctors that we see paraded around on TV, they won't address the subject. I think it's because people don't want to be accused of fat shaming. But obesity isn't fat shaming. Obesity is a clinical reference to categorize somebody, no different than saying this person has type 2 lung, you know, whatever, small cell lung cancer, which is what a friend of mine died of. So I just happen to, unfortunately, have that number. It's a clinical name. And so with people afraid to put a clinical name with the best and the brightest medical in the medical community, so many, not all, but so many afraid to put the name on it. A lot of people are scared to death. People that are metabolically young as well as chronologically young have nothing to worry about, next to nothing. I heard a statistic that if you're college age, you have a greater, statistically greater chance to die in a car accident than you would die of 2019. Right. So I don't know any parents that are keeping their kid at home from going to college because they're saying, nope, I'm not going to let you go to college. I'm afraid you're going to die in a car wreck. I haven't met that person yet. And hopefully I won't, because that's not rational thinking. There's no way to go through life. So I just want to encourage people that if you're listening to this and you've got, and you know what they are, if you've got a pre-existing condition that's type 2 diabetes, that's respiratory disease, COPD, asthma, go down that list. If that's you, stay home. Talk to your doctor before you make any decisions about exercise and where you should be doing that. For 99% of the population, I'm saying you got to figure out how to exercise by hook or crook. If your gyms are closed in your area, like they are mostly here in Los Angeles, then you're going to have to figure out other ways to get things done. Like get some equipment at home. If you follow me on social media, I've got ideas. I'm working out most all the time for the last 5 months outside in a park with some bands and three sets of dumbbells. If I can do it, why can't you? Yeah, it takes a little bit of your imagination. It takes a little bit of, you know, thinking in a way that you're not normally accustomed to. If you're the type of person that normally drove to the gym and took a group exercise class where somebody stands in front and they teach you, you know, you're stepping on the box and the music is going and you're getting instructed. I understand that's difficult to go from that to try to figure it out on your own. But that's where we're at. I'm not the only, you know, fitness, you know, influencer out there. Find somebody that you can relate to. Maybe it's a woman that trains in a certain way that you relate to. Do it. There's just no other getting. There's no other way to phrase it. You just got to do it. And in this day and age, with so much free information available to people on social media, there's really not an excuse to say I can follow this workout. I can do this. Get an app. I do my humble little way of giving back. As you guys know, I call it making you better 30 seconds at a time. And I just give out free information. It's always free when it comes to physical fitness. So I've been blessed to have so many great mentors. I've done a lot of hard studying myself. I keep up with fitness trends, best practices. Nobody's perfect. But the way I talk about fitness today, physical fitness today, I think will benefit most all people out there. And you just have to stay moving. And by the way, I think your original question was, what if you're sedentary? And there's lots of folks that reach out to me and are like, I'm not moving right now. And I know it's not good for me and it don't feel very good. And you're exactly right, Murph. You just got to start moving. What does that mean? That means that at the minimum, I know it's weird how Americans are sort of, in some respects, we're the greatest achievers, build the biggest businesses. But there's also another part of human nature that says, what's the minimum? Right. What's the lowest?
Yeah.
Right? So I'll give you the lowest. Walk for an hour a day, every day. Well, what about taking a day off? Why? You take a day off from brushing your teeth? You take a day off from the shower? Why? Why do you brush your teeth? Do you like your teeth? You want them in your head. And why do you take a shower? Because you want your body to be clean. You know that's important to your overall hygiene. Back in the old days, there used to be a thing called, they used to call, what we call physical fitness, working out every day. 100 years ago, 150 years ago in the United States, they used to call it physical hygiene. So, I mean, this is what happens. I took a class in college. It was the history of physical fitness. I loved it. Anyway, it was how do we arrive at the current, you know, way that we go about our physical fitness in this country? And by the way, and how they do it in Europe. There's a Swedish system, a German system, a British system, all these things, right? So this goes back. Exercising every day goes back 2,500 years to the Greeks. I mean, you read the old Stoics. They talked about the importance of physical fitness back then. What the hell happened is people have gotten so far away from it. I'm here to say, We're still the same species with the same requirements. We need physical fitness. It's part of hygiene is the way we take care of ourselves. We've oral hygiene with a toothbrush and floss, and we've got physical hygiene. That's the one we exercise. We do got to do it every day.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Great advice. And yeah, Raider Nation, get up there, get moving, man. It's so important. And Pete mentioned his social media. It's at Pete Koch, P-E-T-E-K-O-C-H. And those Instagram videos are great. They can be excellent motivators for you. You'll see that he's being creative out there, always getting those workouts in, and definitely take him up on that and appreciate that advice and all those words, Pete. That's great stuff. And hey, I want to be sensitive to your time, but I do want to talk to you a little bit about the Raiders a little bit. And I want to hit you with a question that I think is right in your wheel. I know it's right in your wheelhouse. You know, the Raiders drafted last year Max Crosby, and coming out of Eastern Michigan, one of the things that he was told was he's got to get stronger. You know, he's a big, lanky guy, plays defensive end, same position you played, and he was told he needed to get stronger, and yet he still posted 10 sacks last year and was, frankly, on the short list of Rookie of the Year. Now that so he's got another season under his belt, another off season, and I don't know how much muscle he's put on, but you could see that the guy has put on weight, and he's put on good weight. What is the application of that? What is that? He's already got this productive rookie season under his belt. What is the additional strength and muscle? What tools does that give him? How does that translate to better on-field performance?
Well, I'll be the first to tell you that I love the way this guy Max plays, and I really enjoy him. In a he's in a way he reminds me of a taller Howie Long, but he's very much got his own style, and the way he attacks the offensive line is fantastic. And I want to be clear that my first reaction to your question, which is really a great question, and it really lights up the part of my brain that thinks as a strength and conditioning coach, but also thinks as a guy that was there. I made all those mistakes. There's plenty of mistakes to be made in the weight room. I think that the strength and conditioning coaches in the NFL, this is 35 years after I played, I think they know more, they're better. Because you get stronger, if you measurably stronger, hey, you came into training camp last year and you bench pressed this much, you squatted this much, and whatever, however you want to measure that. But these are undisputable measurements of your strength, and the scale is another thing. And then testing your body fat as a percentage, I don't know if the Raiders do that, but that would give an indication of, hey, did you gain fat or did you gain muscle or how much of this or that? But to say we need you to lift more weights as a general statement is a slippery slope, because what happens if you're the strength coach and that's your edict? And by the way, if I was the D-line coach and if I was the head coach, I'd want to be in on that conversation. But I don't know how they do it with the Raiders. I mean, that's unique to every organization. But if the strength coach says, hey, here's what we want, or we want you to gain 10 pounds of muscle, or we'd like to see if you're bench press, I don't know what the guy bench presses, but if you could just increase your bench press by 50 pounds, because we know some of the guys that are going to the Pro Bowl, they can all bench, 450 pounds, and you can only bench press 375. I don't know. The conversation could go something like that.
Okay.
You need to be very careful, because what if his production goes down? And you thought you had a great, how could you go wrong? You said, well, we want you to get stronger. We want you to add 15 pounds of muscle. Well, I'm telling you, this guy's knocking on the door of the Pro Bowl now. And he's only played 1 year. I know how difficult my first year was in the NFL. I wasn't half the football player that guy was. Not half. So he came out of the gate so strong. I'd be very, very careful. You don't want to do anything to disrupt the natural progression of an athlete of his level. He's 22 and now he's 23. You gotta be very careful. You can really get somebody going. I saw many guys that were really promising in college that were known as like Johnny Bench Press, and they never made it in the NFL. You don't want to be the next Johnny Bench Press. And then one other thing that goes along with that, and I said this earlier, that strength training combined with stretching but they do stretching in a little bit more sophisticated way. You're actively stretching, which is sort of active mobilization. These things done correctly together can do the best job you could hope for of preventing an injury. Okay. And what if you said, look, we want you to do more strength training And if you like, just think of it for 1 second, see, your frame is only whatever size your frame is. We're talking about big men, but whatever. And but you know, just because two guys are both 6'6" doesn't mean their frame is the same size. Like, you know, there's right. a great example. You know, a great example like for me would be a guy I played. I'm trying to think of. Yeah, like there was a guy I played with in Kansas City named John Ault. He was a tackle. He went to five Pro Bowls. He was a first-round draft pick tackle. Terrific guy. Went played at Iowa. And we're the same height. And I played my whole career at about 275. And he did the whole – and he weighed 310. You know what? But his – like everything about John, we're about the same height. But everything else, by any measurement, the size of his – and the things you can't change, forget, I'm not about his waist or you could build up your chest measurement, but I mean, look, you can't change your wrist. You can't change your ankle. And this guy was like 1.5 times me in his bone size. So you have to sort of assess all these things and you're trying to optimize, you know, what you can get out of that athlete. So that's the way, that's a long answer to a way that I would want to manage, especially an athlete who's this young, who's just so promising and he's on the launch pad. You know, 6 years into his career, conversation is different. But right okay. now, I'd make small adjustments.
Okay, good deal. Well, he's exciting. I mean, we, you know, the Raiders need a pass rush desperately this year, and we look for, you know, Clee Farrell and also Max Crosby, these two young studs we got to just really take over this year. I think we got a lot to look forward to, and hopefully they've done that the increments are small, and that any of the things that they did with them to build that strength, you know, they're translatable. Does that help you just create separation from tackles, or what would be the desire yeah. of that for
yeah.
them?
Yeah. So, you know, it's really, to me, first up is playing the run. It's going to give you more of that power, you know, cause you're already lined up against a guy that 100 times out of 100 is bigger than you, right? That offensive tackle, or for that matter, the guard. And I know he lines up over the guard too. So these guys, and so you got to say, they don't have to move as far. That offensive line, they can afford to be heavier, but they play with enormous power. And there's a certain point, like that's where people say, sometimes people would say, they go, well, look, the fastest guy on the team is a defensive back, is a corner. Why not just line him up and make him a pass rusher? Well, just because he is, yeah, he's a cornerback, quicker off the ball, faster than Max. Every corner in the league is, but they wouldn't be any of any use, because there's a combination being an elite pass rusher where there's the cornerbacks just don't have enough power. So when the tackle engages you, they boom, you get stuffed, you get stopped. So there's that fine line between, Max, what he brings is this length, the long arms, the levers. He's explosive off the ball, and he also plays with enormous power. And then somebody's saying, well, if he just had a little more power, what if it was crazy power? What if it was, you know, sort of like Reggie White, Chris Dolman, massive, just overwhelming. Max doesn't play with that level of power. I mean, these guys are, you know, the giants of the game.
Or like Greg Townsend, a guy you played with.
Yeah. You know, and Greg, different body type, right? Greg was only 6'3", but he was the best pass rusher on that Raiders team for many, many years. He brought, like, his skill set was playing it a smaller guy, but with – he was so quick. So he had so much – his technique was absolutely awesome. And, right, and I'm just comparing Max to kind of more –
oh, more six, body type. I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you say, what if we just had, you know, tell the guy to build up, and, you know, is the first thing that comes to mind is he's going to do better against the run. He's going to play better against the run. But there's, you know, I always felt that way. There's that my job as a defensive end was to strike that balance between having enough strength and power to play the run well, but there's only so much power that you need to be a great pass rusher. There's a really a quickness and a suddenness and a elusiveness that sometimes can run counter to your just going in the gym and being the bench press guy. So I think there's a real sweet spot there. And that's part of the art of finding your way as an athlete and then and having a good strength and conditioning coach that can help you manage those things. And, you know, weighing yourself on a regular basis and understanding where you stand.
That's awesome. That's great insight, Pete. I mean, you're the man. This is awesome. This is stuff that, you know, good insight that Raider Nation just doesn't get. You know what I mean? You've been through it. You know exactly what players like Max and the other guys are going through. And so appreciate that and appreciate everything that you broke down for us today, man. So, but before we let you get out of here, what are you up to? What's going on with you? I know we saw you on a bunch of commercials this last year. I know everything with acting and that whole world is tending to be shut down with COVID, but I think things are starting to open up if I'm not mistaken. So you got any current projects you want to give us any hints to, or what's Pete Koch up to nowadays?
Yeah, a couple of things that I can't unfortunately speak to too much. I will tell you that I shot a commercial a month ago. The business is 90% shut down and 10% open, so I was fortunate enough to get in on a commercial for an insurance company that I don't know, they never tell you when it's going to run. It just starts showing someday, so hope folks get a kick out of that if they recognize me there. And I'm working with a company and developing a piece of fitness equipment that home fitness equipment that we hope to take to market maybe at the end of this year. So I'm excited about that. It's very, you know, sort of preliminary stages, but they brought me in as a fitness expert to kind of give some input as to, you know, I might be representing the brand. So we'll see there, but I'm all about that because I just, anything you can do to help people move, you know, in this day and age is good for everybody. And I'm working with another company that's called Rep, and they're associated with everyone sort of knows the Tough Mudder brand, the races, the Tough Mudder, the orange, you know, headbands, and people go hundreds of them and they climb over obstacle courses. And so I'm working at that company. Tough Mudder is spinning off an app which helps people find the right trainer in their region, somebody that's really credible and that can offer the type of training that they're interested in doing, which is, you know, it's needed, right? So some people want a one-to-one training environment, and other people are like, nope, I'm not even comfortable in one-to-one training. But what I'd like to do is get to my gym is closed, but get to the park, and if there's like a boot camp type training where I could get out there and run around with some people, because that's one of the first things I always tell people: if you feel like you're unmotivated to even be doing much of anything at all, find somebody to help you do it, and that can be in the form of your spouse, that could be a friend. If you don't have a training partner, it's more difficult. But it can be finding a personal trainer, but it could also be joining a small group. Small groups are typically defined as between 3 and 6 people working together, or a bigger group like a boot camp group where you can meet people at the park. It's relatively inexpensive, and you know what, you're all in this thing together, so you're moving. So I encourage people to find a way. There's no excuse. It's finding, and not any one is better than the other. The most important thing is you look after yourself, the people that you are responsible to in your life, be responsible for that commitment to personal excellence, and anything I can do to help people connect and get moving, I'm glad to do it. That's what I'm about.
Pete, I can't thank you again enough. I know Raider Nation loves to hear from you every year. You're definitely one of our listener favorites. We always get such amazing feedback whenever you join us on the show, and you've provided some incredible insight today, not only around COVID, but and the effects in the body and fitness and gosh, everything that you hit, and let alone the Raider content. So we really appreciate you, man. I can't thank you enough for your time today.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Go Raiders.
Go Raiders.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.